And now, an ad from Dad.
All right. Save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive. Can I take these off? All right. What is this? This looks good. Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
The amazing drama you're about to see is a matter of human record. You may believe it or not.
Everyone has been destroyed because of this freak. I won't allow it! These babies just saved this lame death party!
Let's consider the secret life of the innermost nesting doll. Living most of her life in the dark, inside the other nesting dolls, she has plenty of time to think, if she could. Sadly, she has no brain. However, when an innermost nesting doll hears that Geico not only saves people money, but also has been providing great service for over 75 years, she thinks it's obvious you should switch. Because yes, switching to Geico is a no-brainer. Pity the innermost nesting doll and her lot in life.
Welcome back to Twig, the flagship of blah, 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 blah. I don't give a shit what Michael says. He always messes it up anyway. I am Alex, and I am alone this time. Why is that? Because we have had the most weird series of unfortunate health catastrophes, I guess you could say, in the last little bit. I mean, it seems every year around this time we end up with some sort of, you know, black plague, death, crazy sickness that spreads to everybody, but this year seems to be particularly worse than normal. Basically, for the last, like, 3 weeks, some of us or all of us have been battling some form of flu or major ailment. As you remember, probably 2-3 weeks back or so, I was hit with the death flu, like, real bad. Where I lost my voice completely from coughing so much. I was barely able to get some of my reviews out. That's about a month ago, I guess. But it lingered with me for about 2.5 to 3 weeks. Now, it went away, and then a week later, I ended up with another, you know, real bad flu fever for like 2 or 3 days out of nowhere, and then it was gone. But immediately after I was sick and recovered, it seemed like people started dropping like flies over with the rest of the Trig crew. First you had Mr. Christopher's girlfriend fall ill with what seemed to be the death plague, and she's still recovering, and we're now a couple weeks in or more on that, I think, like two and a half weeks. Like, we're including like hospital visits just to make sure that, you know, you're not dying. Followed by Mrs. Birdman. She has fallen ill with the death plague, and that hasn't been so great for her because she, you know, has, I think, asthma as it is. So coughing with asthma is not so great. So that made her basically off limits to, you know, be around or even record around because of the coughing and everything. Then you've got Mr. Christopher himself, with his, you know, buttery smooth chocolate wanna fuck him voice, basically slipping into sickness slowly. I think he's at the point now where he's almost completely lost his voice. Then you've got Birdman himself, who somehow through all of this, you know, maintained his health until about maybe 2-3 days ago. He started slipping, he said, and he's just been exhausted and feels like complete utter garbage, and he's going, I was going to record a solo show because everybody can't be here, because if I return to record with them, then I'll probably get sick again, and then it's going to start a cycle all over again. We got to wait till everybody's recovered. Well, he starts to feel sick, and he's like, oh man, I don't want to let the fans down. I don't want to let the audience down. I got to record something. Oh man, can we go a week without it? And I'm like, dude, I'll just record it. And it's going to be, you know, very nonchalant. It's going to be very conversational. This is going to be like a Turd or Treasure mixed with a Twig normal show. It's going to be probably a long one, probably full of a lot of reviews, simply because, I don't have anybody to bounce a lot of the other ideas off of or any of the stories. But I figured I would start off by giving everybody sort of an update on what's been going on in my life. So after I was done battling sickness last week, I woke up and at like 6 a.m, I didn't sleep well, to a message from my roommate who says, this is not a joke, we have a rat. And I went, oh. So I live in an apartment building that is, I'm semi-underground, like I have above ground windows, but I'm technically the first floor, but half of the building is basically underground. So I was like, okay, so we're in the basement. So that's bound to happen. Something like, a mouse getting in or something like that, which is normally fine. But when he says a rat and he shows me a picture, like it was scurrying around. So he left his room and we had to get traps and everything and find out how it got in. And we were like, oh God, how did it get in? If there's one, there's sometimes more. Well, it turns out there's not more. It looks like it might've been a pet, but long story short, we killed it real good, like really good. But it was quite the stirring moment, because he said he had woken up, turned to his left when he heard a scratching sound, and there was a rat that was like nearly 2 feet long from tail to tip. Like we're talking a very large, like New York style rat, sitting on his nightstand, staring at him about 1.5 feet away, and just basically petrified him. Because this thing, if it's a little mouse, you set out your trap, you catch the mouse, you kill it. But a rat, rats are disease carriers. Rats are traditionally seen as unclean, and you worry about the structure of your building. But apparently it wasn't a very like mangy looking rat, and I'll get into why. Basically, we ended up getting traps. We found out where it got in. It was behind the vent, the building that must have got in there. So we, plugged the hole, got the pest control guy to come and take a look. He's like, oh yeah, there's nothing wrong. It came in this one little spot, because they can do that. And it was the first real cold day of the year last week. So it's the kind of thing where anything like that will come in if they can. So it's like, okay, because we're looking around, we're like, we don't live in filth. We're not dirty people. We keep our place pretty good. And I'm like, well, where did it get in? So we couldn't find anything. Well, it was behind the vent. So we plugged it up. We used Mrs. Birdman's tip of putting steel wool inside the hole and then filling it with the pest sealant, which is basically an expanding foam. And we're all good that way. But initially, we didn't know where it got in, and it had disappeared. So we're like, okay, it has to have gone somewhere, because it didn't leave his room, and it wasn't in his room when he put the traps down. Oh, so we're like, fuck that. We don't know what we're doing. So we don't want to be here when it shows up. So we both bailed. And he stayed at his parents, and I went and stayed at my mom's place. And the next day he comes in and takes a look, and he goes, well, I caught the rat. It was terrifying with blood-curdling screams, because the rat did not grab the food and get trapped in the trap with its head and neck. It reached in with its hands to pull the food out, which turns out is very much a pet rat sort of thing. So we're thinking that it must have been a pet that, escaped somebody's house or somebody didn't want, and then it just wandered its way around and found a warm way to get into a building. So so it gets caught by its hand and is not dead. It just has broken arms, and roommate is going, oh God, because he walks in and it's writhing around, making horrible sounds. I luckily am staying at my mom's, hanging out with a little kitty cat that my mom had just got a couple weeks ago. So I'm hanging out with a cat. I'm super duper happy. And he's just like, I caught the rat. It was terrifying. I put it in a bag and took it outside and smashed its head against the dumpster till it died. And then I threw it out. Fuck that rat. And I couldn't stop laughing, but also felt for him. And then, on top of that, I'm at my mom's and we find out she might have a mouse out of nowhere. Because they found little droppings, but before they found droppings, they had been leaving out pumpkin seeds after Halloween to sort of dry out, and they kept going missing, and they're like, Alex, are you eating pumpkin seeds? No, I'm not eating your pumpkin seeds raw, you crazy? So, we weren't sure 100%. We saw some what might have been droppings or something, but nothing major. Like, at first it looked like coffee grinds, but how we knew for sure was this little kitty cat we got. It looks like a little Dr. Wily. Her name's Velvet. She's only about 2 pounds, so she's like half the size of Wily, maybe even a quarter the size of Dr. Wily. But she's, you know, 3 months old, and she's very, very feisty, and she's, you know, I wrestle with her and stuff, and she's a really, really fun cat. But I couldn't find her one day, and I thought, okay, she didn't get out. So I went up to the kitchen, and it was dark, and it was like 11 at night, and I look, and I just see her eyes, and she's got her body sitting in the living room and with her head just poking around the corner into the kitchen, staring underneath the fridge. And I go, okay, what's she doing? And I get closer to her and she's staring into the fridge, won't even pay attention to me. Her ears are flat back against her head and she's just making the sound like that. And I'm going, ooh, she's growling at something. She knows something's underneath the fridge or behind there. So I give her a pet, and she looks up at me, and you know, with her weak little kitten meow, and then immediately ears go back down, staring under that fridge. So if the little mouse traps that my mom has put up don't catch that little mouse, then we're going to have a cat that catches it, which is awesome. I wouldn't have wanted that cat to catch the rat, because the rat was like the size of the cat. But a little mousey? Sure, go ahead, catch it, mouser. So that's basically what I've been up to. It's been an interesting, you know, couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks or so of sickness / rodent and you know, curse you weather sort of situation for me. And then the rest of the Twig crew has been out with the sickness and are still out with the sickness. So I guess I'm completely in control. So what have we got for you this week? Well, I'm going to pull up my notes here because nobody can tell me, it's unprofessional, blah, 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 blah. I'm Michael Todd, blah, 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 radio, blah, 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 blah. Suck a dick. Anyway, so we've got a review of My Hero One's Justice for the Switch and PS4. Then we're going to have the news. What do we got coming up in the news? We've got some stories from Sony, a couple of them. Maybe good, maybe not so good. We've got some Supergirl casting news. Then we've got sort of a trilogy of indie reviews that I've had sort of sitting for a while. I couldn't figure out where to put them because they're short 1 minute or so reviews. Just quick indie reviews of 3 titles, Chicken Assassin Reloaded, Slime San, and Spirit Sphere DX. Then we're going to have the weird news, which involves holograms and AI used in court, which is going to be kind of interesting to talk about. I really wish I could bounce it off the other guys, but they're not here, so I'll just have to maybe pretend to be them. Then another couple indie reviews that I couldn't figure out where to put previously, because this is the super Twig sickness turd or treasure ultra mega okay cowboy number one show. We've got Heavy Fire, Red Shadow, and Giannis Sisters, the remix version on the Nintendo Switch. Then we've got tentatively a Satan's Pantry. I don't have it on me, so we will have it. It'll be magically in the show before it comes out. And if it's not, then I'll just make something up as we go into that segment. Because I have the power. Then, to finish off the show, I've got an SNK 40th Anniversary game review. And then we'll have some sort of closing to talk about what's coming up next on Twig. So, without further ado, here is My Hero One's Justice.
This is a fair request, and I promise I will not judge any person only as a teenager. And that this is no more right than saying all teenagers are drunken dope addicts or glue sniffers.
My Hero One's Justice is the new My Hero Academia fighting game brought to you by Namco Bandai for pretty much every platform out there right now, the Switch, the PS4, and the Xbox One. I had a chance to review it on the PS4 and the actual Switch console as well, and they play pretty much the same. I'm going to keep this fairly quick because playing the game, it actually acts out the acts of the actual season, of pretty much season 2 of the show. So it'll spoil the anime for you if you haven't played it, playing it. So I highly suggest you play the game either as you're watching the show on Funimation or on the Blu-ray sets that are available, or you wait until you're done watching the show before you play the game. Now, I have been seeing some reviews that praise the game. I've seen some that are sort of middling. I'm unfortunately going to have to be on the negative end for this title because I'm actually a pretty big fan of the series. I watched it this summer and I even attended the screening of the theatrical film, and I was pretty blown away by how fun and awesome the series is and the lore behind it, and I just found that the game is lacking severely. It's one of those arena fighters that Namco Bandai's been putting out a lot of lately, and they're usually pretty good. I just found that in this particular case, there was a lot of AI problems. What do I mean by that? Well, very much unbalanced. There's no way to change the difficulty at all in there. There's no, you know, easy, medium, hard. There's nothing that I can see anywhere in there. There's nothing to alter the CPU difficulty or anything for that matter, because you get in and it'll be extremely easy the first couple rounds, and then as you progress through the story mode, it's just like going from one level to the next, it jumps in difficulty crazy high. We're talking where nobody could land a single attack on me at all, and it was basically push, you know, a button to win, to the very next match being completely destroyed, not being able to do anything, and having somebody hit me and doing like 60% damage in one shot. And it made no sense to me. I even, you know, passed the control around to other people to try out, and they had the exact same issue. And, you know, I have friends that are much more into the fighting genre than I am, and played a lot more of these arena fighters, and saying that something seems a little off with the AI. It's something that can probably be fixed with a patch, but at this time, it's just not really, it's not really fun. Because you'll get into a match and either the AI is extremely smart and it'll, you know, basically block every attack and do crazy amounts of damage to you, or you get into a match and it'll sit literally run in circles. And I have footage of this, but I'm not going to post it because I've seen a few others on YouTube that have it. But basically, you'll get into battle and the enemy will sometimes just decide to run in circles the entire match, not attack. Just running in circles over in the corner, not even paying attention to you. You can attack them and destroy them right away. And it seems to be clearly an AI glitch or a programming problem with it. Now, graphically, it's very impressive. It's actually right on par with the TV show. It looks like you were just sort of pulled the graphics straight from it. There's, you know, a visual flair to it. All your attacks are great. It feels a little unbalanced. When you play it as a couple of the main characters, like when you play as Deku, you're pretty good. All Might is pretty good. But some of the other characters just seem a little off, or they're not really as useful. Now, then again, that's pretty much on par with the show. So it's something that I'm figuring a patch could easily balance out a fair bit. The audio is serviceable. I'm only saying that because they didn't include an English language dub for any of this, even for the clips that they took from the TV show. And it's kind of surprising because with most of the other Namco Bandai properties that are based on anime series, they usually get the Funimation dub to do it, or they'll come in and use clips with English in it, and there's no English in this to be seen at all. And this is a show that's having a simul dub by Funimation, and then the movie had a simultaneous release in English as well. So it's kind of odd that wasn't included here at all. So, you know, it loses points for me being that it doesn't have an English dub, even though it really, really should, especially when they're asking pretty much full price for this game. So it hurts me to say this, but I'm going to have to say, avoid the game until it drops in price or it gets a patch to fix some of the issues on the AI technical side, as well as fixing some of the audio. Give us an English language option. So until then, I would say hold off until it drops in price.
Need a new weapon in your battle against evil? Check out LibrisArcana.com for Canada's premier RPG dice subscription service for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping. You can get a new complete set of role-playing dice from D4s to D20s delivered straight to your door. Dice themes are new each month and can be anything your mind can imagine and beyond. Visit LibrisArcana.com and subscribe for only $7.97 Canadian with free shipping and be prepared to open up new worlds of adventure.
News on the march!
It's the news time. Pulling up my stories. Gonna talk about. Okay, so what do we have today? We have Sony. I received an email, press email, shortly, I think, before it went to the main general public, stating that they are going to be shutting down a lot of PS3 first-party title servers. So Warhawk, Twisted Metal, PlayStation All-Stars, and Sound Shapes. Ooh, Sound Shapes, the game everybody played or even knows exists. Anyway, so the shutdown basically means the games will have to be played either locally or in LAN mode for network play in the case of games like Warhawk that are completely online only. So what does this mean? In my mind, this means that they're slowly shutting down all their first-party services on the PS3, it means that we're probably going to be seeing a PS5 very soon. I know people are saying projected 2020. I wouldn't be surprised if it gets announced in like February or March, because I know they skipped the PlayStation Experience, I think, this year. But I get a feeling that we're going to be getting a PS5 announcement sooner rather than later, because all they have to do for these titles is, you know, announce that, oh, they're going to be on PlayStation Now and you can play them on the servers that way or something, or they're just going to discontinue it altogether. Because you got to remember that we're nearing, how long is it now that we've had? It's 2006. So, you know, we're at, you know, 12 years into the system's life cycle and they're still supporting it, which is crazy. I mean, it's only been like maybe the Nintendo that's done that with their handhelds as far as that length of time. Because, I mean, with the PS2, we had, I think, the last really good games that were exclusive come out maybe in 2009, which is, you know, about 8 or 9 years into the life cycle. You had Persona 4, I believe, was the last really good title come out. I always say so. And then, as far as PS3 goes, the last really good titles, because I mean you're gonna get sports titles and Just Dance and that sort of stuff, but I think it was the Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2 that came out a couple years ago, and that was like almost 10 years into the life cycle, which was pretty good. We're not gonna have that, I don't think, with the PS4. PS4 will last another 3 or 4 years probably, and that's about it, because they're gonna want to move and consolidate, because it's Sony as a company has had trouble with basically every other division except for gaming, and the fact that they've officially said they've left the mobile and the handheld gaming markets, so you're not going to get, you know, a new Vita or anything like that, they're going to want to consolidate onto one system they can support across everything. So I think if they were to announce a PS5, it would have to be backwards compatible, at least with software discs or something where you pop in your PS4 disc and it can just play automatically. And it's not surprising if they were to do that, because they're probably going to be going with another AMD-based CPU. And if they go with the newest Zen series, which is the newest Ryzen series CPUs, their GPUs and CPUs are significantly faster. Like, we're talking 4 or 5 times faster than what the system was. Like, you know, 200 or 300 or 400% better than what the PS4 was. So it's enough that it can just play them, because it's just backwards compatible then. And it's just to get the better graphics. You know, it'll detect, hey, you know, this game is... You remember when The Last of Us came out, and it was on PS3, and then there was the PS4 remaster, and it looked better, but it wasn't a huge jump. It'll be that sort of thing where a game that comes out near the end of the life cycle of the system, let's say like a God of War comes out. You've got God of War, it does that checkerbox 4K pattern when you're playing it in 4K mode. Well, what'll happen is you'll put it in your PS5, and it will just download another 20 gigs of assets, and those assets will then make the game completely run in 4K. But it'll still be compatible with putting in your old PS4. They'll do something like that. They kind of have to if they want to make people transition, because it future-proofs their system library. Xbox has had pretty good success with doing that. So I'm not surprised they're shutting down these. I'm surprised that they were even running Warhawk. Warhawk was like a 2006 or 2007 title at the, like, it had to be an early, early title, and it's still running, and it was an online-only game. So I'm not surprised, and seeing as it was free, remember, you didn't pay for online play with the PS3. So, you know, this was a free service that ran for over 10 years. So that's not a big surprise. I'm kind of glad they're dwindling it down, because the PS3 has its place, and it's a great media player if you want to use standard def video or HD video, as long as it's not the H.265, HEVC, like high-end compressible codecs. If you're using it for like regular media or Netflix and that, it's actually a pretty good system, and it's pretty responsive, and it's a better Blu-ray player than what's on the PS4, because it does 3D Blu-rays. And then, of course, you can play your CDs, you can rip your CDs. It's a better media player altogether. So I keep my Super Slim for the simple purpose of I always want to just pull out a player, and I can play my PS1 discs directly in it. So there's that feature. So it has its place, but I haven't played a PS3 title since the Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2. And I believe they're getting a remaster on the PS4 now, so I'll probably go and sink my teeth into that, because those are super fun games. You know, it's like, what if Persona had mecha and craziness? That's basically it. When the system's gonna die completely, I don't think they will do that until, like, the day they launch the PS5. Then they'll cancel all services for it, because they're still giving you free games with PS Plus. They're still giving you Vita games with PS Plus, so I don't know. Maybe the idea will be when the PS5 comes out that it just plays all your PS Network games automatically. If that's the case, then amazing. But who knows? So, you know, to tie in with this story, we've also got another story on how Sony is going to be skipping E3 altogether this year. You know, it's been reported by other people, Sony's skipping E3, and my thought was, so? Their show last year was so bad. So incredibly bad. Like, for a company as big as it is and the market leader to have terrible audio issues, cues where the people weren't ready to be on camera, it looks like amateur hour. We discussed it at length, during our E3 coverage about how inept and terrible their show was. And they only showed off 4 games, and it was like a waste. They would be better off doing their own PlayStation Experience sort of thing, like, or like a Direct, like Nintendo Direct does beforehand. I would rather them in, let's say, March or April, announce the PS5. You know, give us a little spec sheet or a little teaser about a game or a picture or something, and then right before E3, you know, or even show us everything. Show us the whole system, and then say it'll be playable at the E3 floor. When they say they're not going to be at E3, that doesn't mean they're not going to be showing any games at E3. It just means they're not going to be having the press conference, and they're not going to be putting out nearly as much advertisement or crazy amounts of marketing for it. So, you know, Nintendo still shows off their games at E3. It's just they don't have an actual press conference. So that's, I guess, what's going to happen. And then you're going to see the other companies, you know, follow suit. Or I think the software companies are probably still going to have their shows there, and Microsoft will try to, but for the most part, I don't think that they need E3. They're big enough now that it's not necessary. Plus, with E3 being open for everybody to go to, it's not really the same. So I feel that this is a good thing, because they can just probably do what Nintendo does. Give out quarterly directs and give out information on whatever games are coming that are most pertinent to that quarter to help their numbers. Because E3 generally was like, here, is this going to make your whole year? Well, now they don't want to think that far ahead. They want to think in quarters, because that's what they have to talk to their shareholders about. So it'll be cool. I'm excited to see if there is a PS5 announced this year. Even if it, you know, if they announce it, I would say it's probably coming for the holiday season, or like November or fall. But even if they announced it and it didn't come out for another year until the spring of next year or something, that's not a big deal because it gives you time to start saving money. And if you put a pre-order down, you put your $10 or $20 deposit, you know, and I'm not necessarily a big pre-order guy unless you get some really cool stuff, but pre-ordering a system is not a bad idea because we know there have been shortages before. And the PS4 and the PS4 Pro have been pretty good, you know, knock on wood. I haven't had any issues with mine breaking, even though they were first generation ones of each. So I would say that Sony's probably going to handle it pretty well, but you put your $10 or $20 or $30 down or whatever it is. I think it's maybe a $50 deposit you need now at most game stores. But if the system's going to be like $500-$600, I would do that, and then you put down like $20 or $30 every month until it comes out, and then you've got either all of it paid off or most of it paid off, and then you still have money left over, probably, if you're saving, to go buy at least one or two games or a controller. So it'll be pretty good if they do that. I like having a little extra time. I don't like when they're like, here, we announced the system, and it's out in 3 months, and it's like, well, shit, I didn't budget for that. Not everybody has that kind of money to throw around. And I'm not going to, trade in my system towards it until maybe the very last minute if there's a trade promotion, because, you know, I need it for review and for playing games. So I don't have an extra system hanging around. But if they were to say, hey, it's coming out in 2 months, then I probably would just take my PS4 Pro, trade it in, get $200 towards it or $300, and then deal with it from there. So it's been an interesting week for Sony. So that's probably one to keep an eye on. They're the company to look at right now. When Nintendo is pretty stable, you know they're doing their quarterly directs. You know, they have nothing to worry about for the holiday season because Pokemon is selling well, and it's not a system mover. It's really not worth the $80 from what I've played so far. It's super duper fun, but it's not a deep enough game to warrant the price point, except for the fact that it's Pokemon. And then they've got you've got Smash Bros. Coming out. That's basically the system mover. That's going to sell an insane amount of copies. I don't even need to buy it because my roommate will have it, my brother will have it, Birdman will have it, Mr. Christopher will probably get it. Everybody I know is going to have a copy that I can play with, so that's not a concern for me. And I'm not a huge Smash fan. I'm a Smash fan who plays with friends. That's about it. So, and it's going to push things like they're going to have to make accessories for it that are arcade legal and everything, so Birdman can completely spooge all over his pants over it. But until then, it's yet to be seen. And then you got Xbox, which I completely pretty much gave up on. I'm not happy with their system or their service to their games. I'm going to have to wait and see, you know, what they come up with. If they fragmented their audience too much. They got the original, they got the Slim, which has the 4K player, which was the only reason I wanted the Slim in the first place. And then the Xbox One X, which is just completely, in my mind, is dead in the water because it's an in-between system that nobody can afford. It's probably going to be at the same price point that the PS5 is going to be, but the PS5 is going to blow it out of the water, and it's going to have better software support and better software altogether. So I don't know what Sony's going to do, what Microsoft's going to do, but I think for Sony, this was the right move to just, you know, start pulling PS3 support for online services and then pull out of E3 altogether. So what do we have next, you might ask? We have another story, which is, oh yeah, okay. So I am somebody who watches the whole DC CW verse shows, and I would say here's how I would rank them. I rank The Flash is the top show by far. It's a really well made show. It's probably the best superhero show on TV. It has that perfect balance of dark, interesting storylines with believable characters that are fully developed, with the quirkiness and jokey aspect, with very little hokey special effects. It's actually pretty good for being on broadcast TV. And then you've got below that, as far as what I enjoy, is Legends of Tomorrow, which is the goofy, off-the-wall, ridiculous, you know, makes-no-sense show, but it's fun. Then you've got, below that, I would say Black Lightning, but it's not part of the universe, so I'm going to keep that aside. Same with Krypton, amazing show, I really like it, but it's not on the network, and it's not the same thing, but it's not in continuity. So then you got Arrow, which it's one of those shows where it's like every other season's really good. Last season had Dolph Lundgren, so that was fun. This season, I'm like, meh, he's in prison. I sort of just skip through episodes. I'll DVR it and then, you know, fast forward through because I just want to see how it connects to everything and I want to see how it ends. I'm okay with that. And then you got Supergirl, which is terrible. It got a little better when it moved from the original network over onto CW, but it is not a good show. The acting is bad. And the special effects is bad. And the storytelling is very ham-fisted. And like it's very all, you know, alien phobia, xenophobia, and it's because they're like gay people or they're because they're like different transgender people. It's clear what they're trying to do with these, you know, and it's just not very well. It's not very well done. I don't know if they've had different showrunners or different writers each season, but it gets worse and worse. And they're adding John Cryer as Lex Luthor. Ooh, great. 2.5 Men. The worst show that was on network TV in the last 20 years. Like, the worst show. And you're adding the guy that was the most annoying person on one of the worst shows I've ever seen as Lex Luthor. And I know he played another Luthor and was it Superman 3 or 4, the movie from the 80s? Doesn't matter. He's terrible. And people are like, oh, he's a great actor. He just needs to stretch his legs and show what he can do. I'm sorry, no. I have no interest. I'm going to see what kind of a train wreck this is. But I this is not going to be a case of Heath Ledger playing the Joker and everybody's like, oh god, it's going to be terrible, and then they see it and it's amazing. It's just not, because of how the show is handled. I know that Kevin Smith directs some episodes of this and he loves it. I'm sorry, it's just not a good show. It just really isn't. The only reason to watch it is because they do their crossovers every year, and this one is going to be airing, I think, in a couple weeks, where, you know, they have the 4-part crossovers. But like, it's really like, it's amazing how bad this is compared to The Flash. Because they're all produced, I believe, by the same person, the Berlanti, right? Like, so I don't understand how that can be so much worse. But, you know, like, The Flash gets better and better every season. So, I can see why people are up in arms over this, but I don't know. Or people are happy. I have no idea. I'll check it out, but I don't know. So that's been the news. I guess I'm going to sign off and go to me for the next segment. And that was the news. There was plenty more that's popped up in the last week and a half, but that seemed to be what was most pertinent to what we thought as far as entertainment news. There's probably going to be more coming up. We might have a longer show. Who knows what's going on this weekend? It depends on how many people are still sick. It may be a solo Alex show. It may be a Michael show. Who knows? We're going to find out as we go. So coming up next, we've got a package of 3 indie reviews that are very different in each game. Interesting, some good, some not so good. So we've got the indie review 3-pack coming up. Then we have the weird news, which I've got some pretty big opinions on those stories. So that's coming up next on Twig. Chicken Assassin Reloaded is a clicker RPG. And I've been humming and hawing over how I'm going to review this because it turns out I really hated it. Unfortunately, you know, I got a copy for the Switch to review, and I found the controls to be just insanely bad, as well as just the function of the game. So how do I talk about this? Is there anything nice about it? I didn't care for the graphics. I didn't care for the audio, what there was of it. I found this indie title to be severely lacking, and I'm going to keep this review as quick and short as possible because I can't honestly recommend it, even at the price point of ranging between $5 and $8 or so. I think you're going to find yourself severely disappointed in Chicken Assassin Reloaded. Slime Sand is an interesting sort of indie Meat Boy-esque platformer done in a cool art style that's not really been seen before. It almost, to me, looks like it's, I don't know, drawn in crayon, maybe? I don't know. I'm not maybe the best person to describe it, but it's actually quite a fun title. It'll cost you about $15 pretty much on any platform you pick it up on, but if you're into that old school retro hard but not so difficult platform game, you're probably going to be into this. It's something that you're going to want to check out, at least at the very minimum, if you're interested in old school hard platformers. Check it out on YouTube, at least watch a video. And I would say pick it up. It's going to be something that you might find different. It's really hard to put my finger on what's so different about it, but I just love the art style. The graphics are very cutesy, but still unique and sort of creepy. You're a little slime monster jumping around. The controls are very tight and concise. The audio is pretty spot on for what you'd expect a title like this to be. And I would say it's going to be something you might want to play portably. So pick it up on the Switch if you can. Or if you know, pick it up on any platform, actually. It's pretty good. Spiritsphere DX is a weird sort of amalgamation of retro Game Boy Color, hence the sort of DX in the title, color scheme and sprite design, and a Pong / Breakout clone mixed in with, I guess, what was that pinball game that was an RPG? It's that sort of style of game as well. So what is this? Spiritsphere is a game where you're playing as a character sort of battling other characters in a single player campaign that has dialogue, special encounters, and different modes that you can unlock. And each character plays a little bit differently, and you are basically knocking your spirit sphere or knocking a ball across the screen, trying to get it past the other player behind their sort of net / goal area. So think of it sort of as a Pong meets a tennis game meets an RPG meets an 8-bit Game Boy game. It's sort of strange game, but very, very fun. Very difficult, so you're going to want to keep practicing so that you get better and better and better. Once you learn everybody's pattern and their special moves, it's a lot easier to progress further in it. There's competitive multiplayer, and locally on your screen. Fast-paced arcade gameplay. It feels just like something that either would have come out in the arcades in the late 80s or come out on the Game Boy around 2001. It's probably the best way I can describe it. And it's something that I would say works best on the Nintendo Switch, which is what I was able to play it on. And it's something I'm going to pick up and play when I go travel sometimes and I want to pick up a game for 5-10 minutes and just, you know, battle it out, you know, over the spirit spheres. So I would say highly recommended. It's a fairly cheap indie title. It's something you're going to want to pick up just to have in your pocket, basically.
What makes you qualified to be a reporter?
I'm willing to violate anyone's privacy for my personal gain and then claim with a straight face that the public has a right to know.
By the hand of Zeus, what manner of deviltry is this?
I love fake alien poop day.
Scary, weird, and wacky news. What did Birdman pull up for us this week? Because he's the one that likes to curate a lot of these. We have a Japanese man marries computer-generated hologram in $18,000 wedding ceremony. Why am I not surprised? So, okay. So, this was reported by many news sites, but this came from Global News in Canada. When newlywed, I'm going to butcher the name, I'm sorry. The guy's name is Kondo. Okay. When Kondo returns from work in a middle school, so he works at a middle school in Tokyo, he is greeted by the love of his life, who lights up literally in welcome. Oh, he's married to Hatsune Miku. That's the holographic pop star. Okay, so I got a story about this before I go into this any further. I know that it's a series of video games you can get that are like rhythm singing, you know, like SingStar sort of games where you sing along to her songs. Well, my cousin, who's quite a bit younger than me, about 15 years younger than me, I think he's in grade 8 or grade 9, something like that. He and a bunch of his friends are like fans of this. This is like a thing now where people like these concerts. And he went, and I think my aunt was a chaperone to like take a bunch of people over to see him or see this. It's like they do concerts that sold out in like Toronto, even where they went. And it's a concert where you have a backing band and then they put a hologram on the deck, like where it moves around and everything. Remember when they did that hologram? Was it Tupac they did or something? But yeah, it's like a hologram of a made up character who sings the songs, and the crowd is like super duper into it. So it's like, you know, think like your J-pop, K-pop stuff, but a hologram. So apparently it's really, like my aunt was saying, it's a really cool technological feat of how they do it. But I did not know they were doing marriages. So Hatsune Miku is not flesh and blood, but a computer-generated hologram. Her ethereal existence did not stop Kondo, he's 35, from strengthening his commitment to her with a recent $18,000 wedding ceremony. God damn. Okay, now here's the thing. I'm laughing. Here's the thing. Some people might say, oh, you know, don't make fun of the guy. I'm sorry. It's not a real person. It's not even a true AI. It can only do certain routines. This is not a truly thinking robot like that can actually love him. It's something that is programmed to love you, which is sad and funny. And if he doesn't realize that, I'm sorry. He goes, I believe the shape of happiness and love is different for each person. Okay, so that's one thing. There's definitely a template for happiness where a real man and woman get married, have a child, and live all together. But I don't believe such a template can necessarily make everyone happy. Okay, that's probably true. Hatsune Miku was developed as computer-generated singing software with the persona of a big-eyed 16-year-old pop star with long aqua-colored hair. The hologram recognizes Kondo's face and voice with its embedded camera microphone and can respond with simple phrases and songs. See, it's a toy. It's not a... After deciding Hatsune Miku was the one, Kondo said he became devoted to his virtual girlfriend who has thousands of fans worldwide. Extreme devotion to celebrate is not uncommon in Japan, but Kondo's wedding did raise some eyebrows. While 39 friends and relatives attended his November 4th ceremony, his parents didn't. Surprise, surprise. Shame. Ding, ding. The ceremony included the customary exchange of wedding rings. His wife's ring was placed on the finger of a stuffed doll shaped in her image. Okay, we're getting into creepy territory here. Kondo received good wishes and congratulations from friends and fellow Hatsune Miku fans on Twitter. He was also accused of being a creepy otaku or a geek. Yeah, I wonder why. He was among 3,700 Japanese who signed up for marriage. 3,700 people signed up for marriage to this virtual chick. But then he's not married to her. It's polygamy. She's married to like 3,700 people. That's crazy. Enabling them to wed their favorite virtual characters, although the ceremonies have no legal standing. Well, no shit, it has no legal standing. It's not even a true AI. Here's the thing. If you made an actual AI character that had the ability to think and feel and you know, have the same emotions as a human, then if it decides to marry you, that's real. That's something it's decided to do. Not something that's programmed. He goes, people messaged me saying they were encouraged, he said. I think it was nice to have a wedding for that reason. Okay. So, to be honest, this guy's probably very sad, depressed, doesn't know how to deal with the real world. And I understand that, but he should be getting help, not enabling his antisocial behavior. Like, you know, here's the thing. If it stops him from being a creepy guy that, like, grabs girls on the subways, which happens a lot in Japan, I'm okay. I don't know. I think this is ridiculous. Like, it's just beyond me. Like, learn how to be with a real person. Here's the thing. If you're having that much trouble finding a girl or finding a boy or finding whatever you want, It's obviously, well, I guess he's into women, I think, if otherwise she would be a holographic man. But anyway, the fact that he had to get something that that's programmed to like him, maybe think about altering your personality. Maybe think about changing how you act and behave, and maybe you'll find somebody real, somebody you can actually love, somebody that you can touch and you know, make a true connection with. There's nothing more rewarding than making that connection with somebody who's real. I'm sorry, it's not real. Anyway, you know, if I'm wrong, you know, hit me at, you know, alex@thisweekingeek.net or hit me up on Facebook or something, but I'll just probably tell you to fuck off anyway. So our next story is Alexa was used in court. Yes, Alexa, as in Amazon's Echo service. This is interesting. This is getting a little into... Actually, wait. Before I move forward with this, the one thing I will say is the guy that married the Hatsune Miku, that's sort of like the first step towards... if you saw the movie, the new Blade Runner, the sequel to Blade Runner that came out a year or two ago, he had a holographic girlfriend, but it was a full AI. So that doesn't count. Anyway, but it's like a step towards that. So yes, with the Alexa here. In hopes of solving a double homicide case, a judge is turning to Amazon's Alexa, who may have captured the chilling moment two women died in a New Hampshire home. In January 2017, 48-year-old Christine Sullivan and 32-year-old Jenna Pellegrini were stabbed to death in Sullivan's home in Farmington, New Hampshire. Prosecutors said Sullivan was stabbed 8 times and her skull was fractured. Holy shit, that's terrifying. Pellegrini, who has been staying in the home, or who was staying in the home, was stabbed 43 times? Oh my god. Timothy Verrill, 36, who was charged with first-degree murder in the deaths of the women, has pleaded not guilty and is due to stand trial next year. That's a total stabbing. Oh my god. Like, that's a total stabbing of over 50 times but 43 times stabbed? That's the amount of energy it takes to stab into somebody. You don't realize, it's not just like poke, poke. You're talking stabbing into the body, and there's proof that it was 43 times. Oh my god. Jeez. Amazon Echo's speaker with the Alexa voice assistant was reportedly on in the kitchen counter when Sullivan was killed and may have picked up what happened before and after her death, because we know that it's generally, unless you turn it off, it's in the always listening mode. So that means it is recording something to the cloud while it's waiting for a command. Although police seized the Echo when they investigated the crime scene, any recordings are stored on Amazon servers. On November 5th, Supreme Court Justice Stephen Huron ordered Amazon to provide a recording of it, saying there is possible cause to believe the Echo device may have captured the killing. The court finds there is probable cause to believe the server and or records maintained by it or Amazon.com contain recordings made by the Echo smart speaker from the period of January 27th, 2017 to January 29th, 2017. And that such information contains evidence of crimes committed against Ms. Sullivan, including the attack and possible removal of her body from the kitchen. But Amazon is fighting back and saying it would not hand over any data without a binding legal demand. So basically they want, because they're trying to protect their servers and their information from, you know, precedent of other cases where they could just start grabbing information. Basically they're trying to stop Big Brother, because they're trying to hide that they're recording everything you do. They record absolutely everything you do, but they are trying to protect their interest and I guess yours and by chance too. Amazon does not release customer information without a valid and binding legal demand properly served on us. This is not the first time that legal tech giant has been ordered to turn over recordings in order to help solve a homicide. Last year, Amazon agreed to hand over data from an Echo that may have been operating when a homicide took place in Arkansas. But Amazon only gave the data after a suspect who owned the speaker agreed to release the information. So, I don't know how this is going to go, but this is kind of freaky. This is, you know, we're getting into a state where we're going to have to start recording everything we do. And I mean, it would be interesting to see the court have it there. Now, when they hand it over, it's not going to be what you picture. It's going to be, if they do hand it over, it'll be a USB stick or a CD with the recordings on it that play for the court. But I would, in my head, I was picturing the speaker sitting at the witness stand having to answer questions, which would have been hilarious. As funny as that is, this is a horrific crime. So I don't know what this means for the future. It all depends on how this is ruled and if they have to start doing this more and more. If it helps catch a murderer, then I say go right ahead. That's my own personal opinion, though. So there's probably plenty more weird things that have happened in the news lately, but those are the two news stories I have for you this week. So I wish I had something that was a little cheerier than ending on multiple stabbing murders, but that's sort of what it is. So that's it for the weird news today. Okay, thank you, me. Here's back to me. This is the Alex Show right now. So what do we have next for you people? We have a couple reviews, Heavy Fire, Red Shadow, and Gianna Sisters. Then we're gonna have Satan's Pantry, I think. As we get closer and closer, you'll find out. I don't know. Maybe I'll put it in the show notes. Maybe I won't. We're either going to have it or I'm going to make up something else completely. You shall see. Then we're going to finish off the show with the SNK 40th anniversary review. And then I'll be back to talk about what's coming up next for Twig. Okay. So without further ado, here is Heavy Fire Red Shadow. Heavy Fire Red Shadow, brought to you by Mastiff Games, is one of those old school arcade shooters. You know, the ones where you're in charge of a turret and you're shooting off tons of enemies coming at you from every angle. Well, this is sort of an updated version of that for all your major consoles out there. I got a copy on PS4 to check out, and I'd say it's actually a pretty fun game. It's not going to be your Call of Duty or anything that has, you know, very extensive multiplayer or super high-end graphics. It's a fun arcade game that you can, you know, kill 20 minutes with. And I would say that's probably the best way to describe it. It's something that you're going to take in small bursts, but have a fair amount of fun with. There is a PSVR mode in it. So if you've got one of those VR headsets for the PlayStation, you can take advantage of that and be fully immersed in it, and which is a pretty cool feature. I would say the sound design is really good. You can tell where all the enemies are coming from, so you can turn and shoot at them. The reticle is pretty good at being able to make up where you're shooting, so there's not going to be any issues with some lazy controller AI or anything. It works pretty well. I would say it's fun to have, and you know, have a friend over, shoot with them for a little bit. I'd say check it out on the PlayStation Network store. Gianna Sisters Twisted Dreams is a sequel game to the 1987 Commodore 64, The Great Gianna Sisters, and sequel to the reimagining of that, Gianna Sisters on the DS. Now, what is this? Gianna Sisters is an old-school platformer game. The original was sort of like a Mario clone on the Commodore 64, since they didn't have any platformers like Mario. And the original was pretty good for the time, especially running on an 8-bit computer. Now, this is a fully realized 3D, the 3D 2D sort of game, think a la the Rayman games. But I will say one thing, the controls on this are a little floaty. They don't feel like I'm used to when I'm playing most of my platformers. I like them tight and where you can jump and control everything. It feels like you can jump a little too far or a little too less, like you're judging your distance is not always right on, but you are pretty good at maneuvering around when you're not jumping. So I think it's probably just a matter of how the game was designed, because it's based on the older style of platforming that was around in the 80s, where a lot of times when you started jumping, you sort of just floated up there for a while and would land. It's not terrible like a lot of the games where you jump and you get hit and you just get knocked down somewhere. You do continue sort of on as you float around. Now, the game is about you collecting a bunch of crystals as you're trying to save your sibling there. Now, I'm not going to go too much into this, simply because this is a quick review, because this game has been out for a few years on other platforms, but it just came out recently on the Switch. So basically, how does it play on the Switch? It plays pretty well. The graphics are fine. They don't look any different than what was on the other consoles from a couple years ago. So the Switch can definitely handle, you know, the HD graphics. The music is charming and fun for the style of game it is. You know, it's a very upbeat sort of game. You can, on the fly, switch between... You're basically switching between worlds, you know, and one character can collect a certain type of, you know, crystals and gems, and another character collects the other color, and it changes the world around you. So, like, a bridge that you can't go over normally, you switch to the other character, and that makes the bridge accessible, but something else won't be accessible. So you're constantly switching between the characters that you control so that you can traverse the world. As far as that goes, there isn't anything special about the Switch that makes it different, except for the fact that these levels are easy to play on the go. So whereas you'd be playing on the PlayStation 4 or let's say the Xbox or anything like that, you know, it's a fun little console game, but with the Switch, what that opens up, it's the first time it's been released on a portable console, so you can actually go, you know, take it with you on the bus or take it on the go or to the cottage or to your parents or whatever you want to do. You have the ability to take the game in 5 or 10 minute chunks and beat individual levels, which is actually perfect for it. I found that that was the best way that I had to play the game, because it's not the kind of game where you're going to sit down and play for hours upon hours upon hours. It is a game that is best absorbed in small chunks. So I had fun with it. I would say I recommend it as long as you pick it up on the cheap, because it isn't you know, a deluxe high-end retail game. So when you see it on a sale, let's say on Black Friday or for Christmas or just any time that you see like a platform sale on the Nintendo Switch, definitely pick it up.
Welcome to hell.
You wouldn't even serve it to a pig. It's inedible.
It's Satan's Pantry time, and I was informed we don't have a Satan's Pantry. We had stuff buffered up until this point, but with the sickness, we haven't had time to actually record anything else. Usually we pre-record a few at a time, and we have nothing. So through the magic of recording, I'm going to make up something right now. So I'm going to tell, instead of, you know, tasting something and testing it, I'm going to tell two quick stories about some of the times I've almost died from eating food. So, story number one, we're going to call this the time my mother tried to kill me as a kid. So, there was, I forget exactly what was going on. I was younger. I was in, was I in high school or just, yeah, I was in high school, I think, nearing the end, like grade 12. And my mom was upset about something, and there was a big fight going on. Well, she decided to make dinner angry, which is not a good idea. So she decided to make spaghetti. But instead of spaghetti sauce, she used fish sauce. Like red fish sauce, and then put shrimp in it. And it was the worst smelling thing I've ever smelled in my entire life. It was so bad. I took like a little bit on my finger, tried it on my tongue, and it just tasted like sickness and death. And my little brother, who's 6 years younger, decided to eat some because he didn't want to fight. I was like, fuck this, I'm going to my bed. I just left. I didn't... walked away, there was a big fight. Hey, you're sitting down eating, this is what we made, da-da-da-da-da. And then I felt like, I was like, oh, this makes me feel bad. But then for the next 2 days, my brother and my mom continued to just have food poisoning and barf and go crazy. And they're like, oh my God, I'm dying. What is it? What, how did we get sick? How did you not get sick, Alex? I said, it's when you tried to poison us with that food. Like, that's all on you. So that was the time she tried to kill us. I mean, intentionally or unintentionally. No, it was unintentional. She didn't mean to try to kill us, but she almost did. Now, as far as my second story, which is probably a little bit longer with trying something. It wasn't that it was weird, but I had a chili at my college when I went back to school when I was in my late 20s. And the chili was not so good. And I, what do I mean by not so good? Well, it made me very ill, and it was right during exam season, and we were supposed to be doing presentations. And when I say really ill, I mean I had the shakes. Something fierce. Like, I thought I was dying. I probably had a fever of over a certain amount. Who knows? It was bad food poisoning. You know, of course, the school and the cafeteria denied it later on. But I had to take a zero on one of my presentations. The teacher, you know, normally wouldn't, the professor wouldn't let you normally make it up. But he believed me because I was one of the best students in his class. I was diligent. I did my work. I did extracurricular stuff. I even ran a club for him. So he did end up, you know, he gave me like, no matter what, if when I did the presentation later, I got like an 80 on the presentation, but the maximum he would give me is a 60 just to pass. Because, you know, I wasn't prepared for the day I was presenting because I was sick. But to give you an idea, how did I convince him that I was really sick? Well, I ended up going to the bathroom when I was sick, and I projectile vomited at home, and we're talking projectile everywhere. And it was red and horrifying looking and smelled like the worst. It was like sewage boiling on the stove. That's how bad it was. And it was biley and disgusting. Anyway, I hope I haven't made you puke. But it was bad. And I puked everywhere. Like, I couldn't even make it to my knees to puke. I just puked all over the floor. And I was like, I'm going to bed. Somebody else help clean this up. And while I was back in school, I was staying with my mom and my brother. And my brother goes, oh my God, Alex, he puked everywhere. And it's all over oh God, it's terrible. And it was so bad, and it stank, and you could smell it down to the basement, like for all the way from the top floor. And so I went to bed, and I puked so hard. You know, they ended up cleaning it up, and I was so grateful because I was in no condition. I was falling over. I probably should have gone to the hospital. But I puked so hard that I gave myself black eyes. I burst every blood vessel in my eyelids completely, and I was like purple. And I took a picture, sent it to my teacher and said, I didn't realize I didn't resize the picture. So he opens up his email box and it's just this giant blood vessel, broken black eyes. And he just goes, next time, Alex, I'll just believe you, but you don't need to send that kind of proof again. So that was probably the sickest I ever got from eating food. And it was clearly something was not right with the chili because it was just a chili and something at school because it was the winter semester, so I wanted something warm. And you know, I don't know if I was the last person to get the chili. I don't know what was up, but I got real sick from it. And I'm not allergic to anything food wise so yeah, that's Satan's pantry. I'm trying to think, is there another time where I had something weird that happened to me that way? There's probably more I can come up with at a later date, but those two will have to do. That's gonna fill in. It's instead of Satan's pantry, it's Alex's story time, I guess. So that's going to be it for Alex's Storytime this week. Hopefully next week, if everybody is not sick, we'll be able to get together and record another Satan's Pantry, because I know there's a few items that we've wanted to try. I got to see if I have it. I had a cricket candy bar somewhere here made of crickets. I don't know where it is. Anyway, we'll have something gross or something weird or something interesting to try hopefully next time. Or I believe Birdman and Blair are trying to put together a couple more recipes from that Fallout recipe book. So hopefully we got something like that. We don't know yet because everybody is sort of in limbo except for Alex, because Alex is good now.
Do you have any hobbies?
I collect spores, molds, and fungus.
Hold that thought. It's crapper time.
The SNK 40th Anniversary Collection is a new collection brought to you by NIS America on all your major platforms. I got a review copy on the Switch to look at. It's an interesting title in that before it launched, it came with a set amount of games: Alpha Mission, Athena, Chrysalis, Guerrilla War, Ikari Warriors 1-3, Iron Tank, POW, Prehistoric Isle, Psycho Soldier, Street Smart, Tank 3, and Vanguard. Now, those titles, for any of us that grew up going to the arcades, especially in the late 80s, early 90s or so, they were staples in there. This is the pre-Neo Geo SNK. So all these titles are pre-Neo Geo platform. This is sort of what they built their entire company on. This was the bread and butter of the 80s. And if you've played the Ikari Warriors titles on, let's say, the Nintendo Home Entertainment System, you'll know the kind of style that most of these titles are in, which is the overtop view where you're a run and gun and you can get into tanks and move around. There's a handful, I would say about half the titles on that list of the launch titles played into that play style, because that is the style of game that they, I guess, started with and sort of revolutionized for the arcade market. Other titles on there are mostly top-down shooters in some format, but you do have a standout, which is Chrysalis. Now, Chrysalis is one of my favorite NES titles growing up. It was sort of, think of what if Zelda 2 was actually good. Now, that might get some flack when I say that, but it was a RPG, an action RPG in the vein of Zelda 2 meets, I guess, the original Zelda, meets a Final Fantasy, but action-oriented. Sort of maybe a precursor to the Mana series. And it's, to this date, I believe the only action RPG that SNK ever produced and released. Especially that it was a home console exclusive. So that's the one I wanted to play the most, because it's something I haven't played since I was a kid and had to plug it into my Game Genie to make it work, because my NES, like many others, wasn't really working anymore. I didn't know at the time that you could replace the pinhead on the back as far as the connector goes. So we used to go to a liquidator store that had Game Genies. And they, when I say it had Game Genies, I mean they had bins of Game Genies and they were a quarter apiece. Interestingly, you could use them for, let's say, the first 20, 30 times in your Nintendo and it would work fine. And then eventually you'd have to switch it for a new one. So we had at one point probably 10 or 15 Game Genies that we would just swap out and plug games into. We left them plugged in pretty much permanently, and then we would just swap those out into the system. For whatever reason, that worked. So anyway, I remember playing Chrysalis on the Game Genie, because it is a hard game to beat. It's one of those games where it's unforgiving. If you walk into the wrong area and you don't have the right item, let's say a gas mask, you can die pretty much immediately and have to start back from where you saved. So that being said, I was very excited to play that, and I can say it plays pretty much exactly the way I played it originally. I don't see any frame slowdowns or anything, and the game is enhanced by playing it now, obviously, through HDMI, and you can have scan lines turned on. The standard sort of stuff you get now when you buy arcade remastered titles on Virtual Console or the PlayStation Store, that sort of deal. Now, in this, it's kind of interesting. All those titles that I mentioned earlier, you can switch between the US and the Japanese releases, which can have some slightly different graphics or different play styles, but you have the option to do that. You can also switch the amount of coins you have to start with, or essentially lives or continues. So you can manually change the dip switches that would have been in the original stand-up arcade. Now, there are other titles coming out later on, and they're going to be, for the most part, digital downloads, completely free, and they should be hitting the store actually by the time that this review comes out, where you'll be able to grab a bunch of other titles there, and then there's going to be a couple extra titles that aren't just an automatic download that you'll have to go and download from the Nintendo store. Now, when you do so, they are completely free. So you're actually getting a fair bit of extra games, upwards of 25 or so, and then it looks like they might be supporting it up into the future later on too. So there's actually a lot of titles coming up for this, and there's going to be a steady stream over the next couple of weeks. So for the price they're asking, it's at about half of what a normal retail game would cost when you go to stores up in Canada. So, you know, in the $50 range here versus the $80 range. And that's actually completely worth it, considering the amount of titles you get, things that I hadn't played before. For instance, Street Smart, I had never played that before, and it's their sort of first fighting game, I guess. And it's not a very good fighting game, but it's very interesting to see how their take on the game was back when Street Fighter was sort of becoming king. As far as Tank and Vanguard and Prehistoric Tale and Psycho Soldier come, they are hard, fun arcade games, but again, you can change the dip switches, so you can change how you play, you know, if you want to make it easier or harder on yourself. Ikari Warriors plays exactly like I remember in the arcades, so I'm very happy with that. Alpha Mission, same as well. So there's something sort of for everybody here, and I would say it's going to make a pretty good title. I'd say pick it up physical if you can. If not, it makes a good digital gift as well for Christmas. Hooray! You have made it to the end of the show. Has it been a good show? I hope so. I mean, it could have been terrible. I, for all I know, it could have been completely horrible. But to each his own, I guess, or her own, or its own, or whatever. Oh, PC. Anyway, what is next for Twig? We've been trying for quite some time to get a bunch of different shows off the ground, but again, with sickness and different things popping up, and Broktober, and then Black Friday stuff, and everything, it's been kind of hard to get a show put together. I know Birdman wants to have a Botched Role come out fairly soon. We did, I believe, miss the window. We wanted to have a prototype out on Battle Royale games. I have no expertise in that because they're not my shtick. But I know that Mr. Christopher and Birdman wanted to get that out soon. So we got a couple of those. I've wanted to have a couple commentaries out. It's just been finding scheduling and getting things done. I know we've got a bunch of stuff to review, so I can just talk sort of about what I've got coming. I will probably do a Turtle Treasure this month. I know we're doing our gift guide very, very soon. So we're trying to gather together some of the things we've had to review, some of the products that we've purchased ourselves that we want to talk about that'll be great for Christmas and any, you know, anybody who's buying for the holidays. That should be fairly soon. I don't have a tentative date on that yet, but we are gathering everything together. What do I have to review on the way? I have two Blu-ray sets of lost TV classics that are either TV pilots or dramas that, you know, were thought lost to time but were found and remastered. Some of them even have, like, William Shatner, John Cassavetes in them. So I've got those. I'm about halfway done reviewing that. I have the original Body Snatchers movie has been released on Blu-ray. I've got that to review. There are a couple games I've got coming out, some PS4 and Switch titles. I can't say exactly which for everything yet of when they're coming out, but there's Trailblazers, there's Grip Combat Racing, there is... I'm working on Pokemon as well. That's just for me, so that's sort of on the back burner right now. There's potentially some new titles coming down the line. We just got to wait to see if they show up. There's I've got a couple Kung Fu movies maybe coming. There's some anime reviews that Birdman and I have to finish. We have watched the anime. We just haven't actually recorded a review yet. So we've got Bubblegum Crisis. There was a Blu-ray set that came out of that. That should be coming soon. As well as Riding Bean, which was an OVA that was meant to be a pilot for a TV series that didn't get made. It's pretty cool. We'll talk about that. And we've got... what else? There's a bunch of stuff. I know there's... oh, I have MacGyver Season 1, the original series on Blu-ray remastered to review. I'm still working on my long-awaited, in my mind, long-awaited Outer Limits original series Season 1 review. I've got that on Blu-ray that I have to talk about. So there's that. There's more coming. There's a fair bit. It's one of those situations where a lot came out in the last month, and we've tried to keep on top of everything, but Broketober plus sickness equals not so fun. So at least being sick gives us time to actually watch all these things. It just doesn't let us record. My voice finally came back last week, and I was like, I'm ready to go, people. And they were like, nah, we're dead. We're dying. So that's going to be pretty much it for right now. We've got a bunch of shows coming up. We are going to be taking a hiatus, I believe, from regular shows in the December time period. I'm not sure exactly when. Probably mid-December. As we get closer to Christmas, we're just not going to be able to. Now, that's not to say we won't have content come out. There's going to be some things like a commentary or two or some specials. It just might not be regular. We might pre-record some stuff and have it come out. But rest assured, during the holiday season, while we take a hiatus, you are going to have some pretty fun content coming out. And, of course, you'll be able to see us online at Facebook and Twitter and playing online and everything. So that's going to be it for this week. Now I have the arduous task, you know, because you're hearing this after the fact, of putting the show together. So, yeah. Anywho's it, what's Michael Dodd say? Live free or die hard or some other stupid shit. Yeah, so live free or die, just die. Anyway, bye-bye.
Okay, son, now you're starting to scare the viewers.
Just act normal.
I'd ask you to do the same, but I'm afraid that ship has sailed.
Why are there so many ostriches?
But you have a game that is dipped in the f- ha ha!
Ropey, thick, window cocking.
So guys, we'll be right back right here on This Week in Geek, only on thisweekingeek.net and many other sites where I syndicate this crap, because I'm a media slut.
I like turtles.
Loose like your mom.
That's right.
No fisting, you say. Anything else you object to?
Me lucky tater tots.
You've been listening to This Week in Geek. Check out our website at thisweekingeek.net for more geek content and subscribe to our podcast through iTunes or any podcatcher. If you'd like to comment on this episode, head to this episode post on thisweekingeek.net and comment through Facebook Connect. Or you can call our voicemail line at 817-717-7202. Follow and message us on Twitter at This Week in Geek. And check out our Instagram at twig_official_podcast. And if you're the good old-fashioned email type, send us an email at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. We'll see you next time. And remember,
lower your shields and surrender your listenership.
Clean your wet cock when we's done, sir.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The internet can be your window to the world, or an open door that lets cyber criminals in. Online theft, webcam spying, and identity fraud are all on the rise. But you can stay safe with Kaspersky Lab, the world's most awarded internet security. Kaspersky protects your money, privacy, identity, and data with technology perfected over 20 years. So keep exploring. Kaspersky Lab will keep you safe online. Learn more at Kaspersky.com.